This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. The signature sponsor is the Mayor's Office of East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. We begin with Darius Lannis, 6 years on the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. He's the former president. And tomorrow night at 5 o'clock, if things go according to plan, a vote is scheduled at the school board office, 10,050 South Foster Drive, on whether Kevin George or Andreas Zayas will be the new superintendent of the East Baton Rouge Parish School System. Yesterday, there were questions involving both of them that went on for several hours, and Darius was right in the midst of it. What's your take on where we are right now?
Well, first and foremost, good morning, Jim. Good morning, Talk Louisiana and surrounding areas. It's a pleasure being here this morning with you. I say my take is the community is watching very closely. Their concerns have to be our concerns because they are our constituents, and listening to them and understanding, you know, what they want in the superintendent, because as we always know and as we always talk about when I come on the show, you know, the most precious investment they can give us is their child. So we want to make sure we put our best foot forward. So a lot of the communication you're seeing, a lot of the engagement, a lot of the things you see being written up, the news articles that are coming out, is because we have a community that's fully engaged in this process, and we have to make sure we put our best foot forward and select the next person to take over at the helm of the East Baton Rouge Parish School System.
Have you decided who you're supporting?
I have decided on the way I'm going to vote. I can't say so today. I think that a lot of the conversation still needs to be had with our community, and I'm pretty sure you'll hear quite a few people come out to the board meeting tomorrow and let it be known, you know, what their thought process is. I will say that's a very high segment of our community that is still upset about the fact that interim superintendent, Adam Smith, did not get a fair shot when we went through the semifinalist process to select our three finalists to move on throughout that process of the next superintendent throughout the search process. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of those collective voices are being heard. You know, right now you have a collaboration between our teacher unions who are saying that if we don't get this process right, they don't want to come to school either the first day or either the first week. You know, and you have to take those things into strong consideration when you go through these types of processes.
Well, today the story's above the fold in the Baton Rouge Advocate. Vote looms on EBR Schools Chief, and Charles Lucier writes the story, a veteran reporter on this issue himself. And this is a 28-year veteran who has passed over. He is the interim superintendent, Adam Smith. It's the second largest school district in the state. Why was he passed over as a finalist?
You'll hear several different things, right? But I think the overall arching thing that we're hearing throughout this process, and this is from any particular end of our community, is that there's too many external forces that are trying to pull board members or influence board members in one particular way. And I think when you add those things into the conversation, it makes people feel against the inks that the process is not fair. You know, one of the things that I've heard over the course of the years of serving on the school board is that the process has to be as important as the product. If it isn't, then, you know, if the process starts off messy, the end process is going to be that it's going to be messy. I think that's the place that we're trying to get away from right now as a board. I think we all are on the same page. You want to see somebody that it right size and fits the right hem of what we want as a superintendent. But as I said before, it has to be done in a way that makes sense for our community and also makes sense for our kids and for our employees.
877-217-5757 is your number for Darius Lannis in our time with him. Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman are on deck to talk about state and national politics. But the city of Baton Rouge right now is about to select the person who is one of the most important people in leading our community. And a listener has already asked about the unfortunate departure, he says. This is Tom on Bluebonnet, of Cito Narcisse. What the heck happened with him?
I think, as I said before, a lot of people had some concerns about the outside influences that wanted to try to, you know, get board members to lean a certain kind of way. What I can say is over the course of last year, you had a lot of good things about former superintendent Cito Narcisse. And then the end of the year, a lot of those things kind of changed as we got closer to the vote. I think we saw some similarities of what happened with interim superintendent Adam Smith. At the beginning of this year, we heard that, you know, he's a good company man. He's a great fit for our community. He's been here a long time. He's committed. And, you know, you heard some people say, we want to see him get through the budget process. And if he can if he can get us through the budget process, because at the time we thought that we had a multi-million dollar budget shortfall, not only did we end with a historically high fund balance, but we also have we were $4 million in the black, which shows that not only did he balance the budget, he also found enough funding to pay all employees throughout our system. I think when you give somebody that level of job duty and they reach those heights further than we thought they could, I think that you deserve a real shot at really getting the permanent position. But I think a lot of those sentiments were felt at the beginning of the year. That was a clause that was placed inside of his contract that said that he was blocked from even running for the office, which for a lot of people didn't make any sense. So we removed that clause to give him a real shot. And I think a lot of people feel as though even with removing that clause, as we got to the end of the process, he just really didn't get a fair shot because people felt as though the community had too much of a stronghold on the support they had behind him.
You're talking about Adam Smith.
Yes, sir. Adam Smith.
Is there a chance he could resurface?
Well, you know, it's a conversation that has to happen amongst our board. If there's enough votes to get him there, I think that'll happen. But I don't think that in this particular process, you know, do we hold the process up to try to push him in? I think for the sake of kids, and we think about the first day of school, you know, we have to make decisions that just make sense for us. If you ask me, do I support Superintendent Adam Smith or Interim Superintendent Adam Smith? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, we still have to also think about kids. That doesn't mean that, you know, any of the candidates that we see right now are going to be the number one pick either. But, you know, we just don't know where we are with that process, and we're going to find out tomorrow night.
A listener asked about your impression of the two candidates without revealing your choice. I think you got two exceptional finalists. Let's start with Kevin George.
What I say about both candidates, I've had the opportunity to speak with both. I think both of them are incredible. I think that I would never question their work. You know, anybody that gets involved in the work of education and trying to, you know, educate kids and work through those levels of processes, I think that my hat goes off to them. But I want to see them be able to stand alone without any influences at all, no board influences, no outside or external influences. And I think that's the question right now is, can you stand on your own? Can you create a plan on your own? Can you move a district of our size on your own without any external influences telling you what to do? That is the thing that scares our community the most. You know, when you talk about, again, and by the way, before I say this, I want people to understand, I am pro-education. I am not against charter schools. But at the same time, we can't offload traditional schools for charter schools. And in the same instance, we can't ignore charter schools just simply because we think that they are not a good fit for our community. I think everything has to have an equal footing, right? But in the same interest, we have to do what is best for our community and do what's best for our school district.
Well, there are some distinctions between the two, and yes, one is local, one is not, but the other may have a superior resume, and those things count. Both are accomplished people. Mm-hmm. Were there any distinctions as far as presentation without playing your hand? I think they both put on good performances, if you will. But what distinctions, if any, do you see?
I think for me, I like to hear data. You know, all of the other stuff is amazing, right? But I look at them like a kumbaya moments, right? They come and they go. I need to understand that you know how to aggregate data, that you know how to break data down and make it make sense for our district, that you know how to move a kid that is in a low-performing school and you get them to proficiency. Those are the things that make sense for me. Those are the things that make sense at the end of the year when students have to pass a grade, when you talk about pupil progression, when you talk about the way that teachers are graded on their ability to move a kid and get them to the place where they need to be. What I do know is that inside of our district, 50% of our students are at least one or two grade levels behind. Those are the things, the solutions of hearing how they're going to make those things and turn those things around, make them make sense for our district. Those are the things that make sense for me. I haven't quite heard that yet, and I want to ask more questions. I want to be able to hear more so that I can get a better understanding of where both of those candidates lie.
All right, Tony in Scotlandville says the LSU Lab School is not a real public school. It's certainly much different. It has admissions that are selective. Is it really legitimate to have, Tony asked, to have a candidate coming from a school that is much different than most public schools in our community?
Well, I'll say, first of all, good morning, Brother Tony. Thank you for the comment. I would say, you know, before he took over the laboratory school, he was the superintendent of St. John the Baptist Parish. So he has superintendent experience, but I understand where he's coming from with the question. He's not specifically saying that is not a real school. I think what he's saying that...
Oh, it's a great school.
Right. I think what
but
he's,
it's not a real public school compared to others. And
right.
You not know, the same kind of challenge.
When you think about our demographics, the demographics are not the same. When you think about the poverty rate, they are not the same per student. When you think about how many students we have inside of our system versus university lab, they are not the same. So I understand Tony's question. You know, and I think, again, those are the kind of things that people think about when they think about what's the good fit for our district.
Well, and the other candidate has an amazing resume, but is not from here. Mm-hmm. We tend to be insular in our community. Mm-hmm. We don't tend to cater to outsiders sometimes.
Yep. What I'll say is this, though, Jim. I was looking at something today, and it said the worst state in the in the United States is Louisiana, in terms of incarceration, in terms of education, in terms of healthcare. So if we think in Louisiana that we know we have all the best ideas, we're the experts in all of these amazing fields, I would say, I think totally different about that. I think that you need outside sources to let us know, what are you doing great? You know, because if you look at the places that Ms. Zayas did come from, which is like Boston, those areas like that, they are in such a better shape than we are as a district and also as a state in terms of education. You know, inside of our state, education isn't even a part of our constitution, which means it's one of the first things to get cut every single year at the legislature. So, when I think about things like that, we need outside people. Now, am I saying that Ms. Zayas is going to be the number one person who we go with? I'm not saying that. But I will say we need experts outside of our state that can also help us move the needle.
Well, Darius, we'll follow with you and call on you again soon. Thank you very much. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Robin Dow is producing, and our email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we are 16 weeks from next Tuesday, is November 5th. Now think about it. We've got a hurricane season that could be dreadful for Louisiana, and that'll all have been in the past by the time we vote for president, but on the whole, it's not all that far away, 16 weeks from Tuesday. And we have local elections, too, including one for mayor-president in East Baton Rouge Parish. Last year was a statewide election cycle, and before we get to the national scene, Scott Wilfong on the right, Dane Sherman on the left, two seasoned politicos. Dane's a professor, Scott's a political consultant. And they're speaking as individuals, not associated with any entity they might represent. But let's begin with Jeffrey Martin Landry, who 2 days ago celebrated his six-month anniversary as the governor of Louisiana, number 57 on the all-star list. And Dane Sherman, we've done this before. I remember asking you, and I believe you gave Bobby Jindal an F after 6 months. What's the report card looking like from Professor Sherman for Governor Landry?
Thanks, Jim. I'll give him a solid F, but he's been more effective getting his agenda through, which I think is terrible for the state of Louisiana, than Jindal was. So, you have to say that at least he's getting what he wants. We can see what he wants, and he's pushing most of it through. He hasn't gotten everything. And some of those things have actually made the right really angry. He's been very much a lightweight on tort reform and trial lawyers because he made the great devil's bargain with them. I'd give him an F, but that's kind of what I expected.
You don't even give him a D for congressional redistricting? John Bell tried that, couldn't get it done, but Jeffrey Martin Landry did.
Well, look, I just said he was very effective getting his agenda through. So if you looked at it purely as a legislative feat, I'd probably give him an A on that, getting his agenda through. And look, there have been some things that have not been awful. I think the, deciding, hey, we're just going to make our own map. We're going to do it. We're going to try to bypass the feds writing the map for us. I'll give him credit for that. And like I said, I think he's been legislatively very effective. I just am not been very impressed with the overall work product that he's pushed through.
Scott Wilfong, we have, I think, a record budget. We certainly aren't spending less. And, of course, a lot of that is federal money, as we know. It's most of the state budget. Many people may not realize that. And that includes the Medicaid expansion, which is largely paid for by the federal government, but it's still a cost to Louisiana as far as the actual budget. But nonetheless, Governor Landry is looking ahead at a year in which he apparently will not renew the 0.45 sales tax, and then he'll have to take out the axe and start cutting like Bobby Jindal, and he could make some enemies. Usually governors are popular when they have money and not popular when they don't. But after 6 months, I suspect you're going to give him a higher mark than an F.
Well, you know, obviously Dane and I are good friends and do the show quite a bit, but I think his opinion and his statement about an F really shows the Democrat vision for Louisiana, which is, you know, the policies Jeff Landry's put through have been tough on crime. They've been good to parental rights, liberty, right to bear arms, and, you know, things like teaching our children, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. That's an F to Democrats. That's what they don't want. That's not in their vision for Louisiana. They want more crime. They want less parental rights.
Do you really believe
they
want, anybody wants more crime?
What Jeff Landry has done in the first 6 months has been to crack down on crime. He started the first session he had was about crime. The rights of parents to have influence over their kids' education, their life choices. And then the biggest thing that the liberals are absolutely just wetting themselves over is putting something on the wall that tells our kids, don't kill, don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie. And that is, they are going crazy over this. So that's it's really a microcosm of the national vision.
Okay.
That's what the left wants
for America.
Well,
according to the Ten Commandments, you wouldn't have the death penalty. And you would be put to death for adultery. So should we dispense with the death penalty?
I don't want to get into
having sex with people outside their marriage.
I don't want to get into a theological discussion, but some of your listeners will know that the word kill in the Hebrew is murder. So the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not murder. It does not contemplate soldiers
Leviticus,
in war.
Leviticus clearly says you die if you commit adultery. And there's no statute of limitations either. I mean, we could go back 30 years, and if somebody committed adultery, they would be put to death based on the Ten Commandments, Dane Sherman.
Yeah, I think I've just heard the reincarnation of Rush Limbaugh in my buddy Will Fong there. So, look, I don't care. The Ten Commandments is silly. It's unconstitutional. It wouldn't bother me so much if it was actually in Hebrew on the wall. But with the Ten Commandments, which is really doesn't need to be in a classroom, covetousness, which is one of the commandments, thou shalt not covet, is the very basis of capitalism. If you're not for covetousness, wanting something you don't have, there is no capitalism. So it sounds like what Scott is actually advocating for is a move to the socialist left.
Yeah,
and I'm shocked by it. I am totally shocked by it.
I think what you're really seeing here is a contrast. The conservatives want to put criminals in jail. Democrats want to put criminals in the voting booth and in girls' bathrooms and things like that. So
criminals,
you know,
in girls' bathrooms. And I don't think there's anything criminal about being transgender, and that's what you're referring to. But anyway, if you'd like to chime in on two electric guests and a listener before we go to the calls, this is Hal in Monroe. He notes that last week on this show, Dr. Samuels at Southern University, Albert Samuels, says he will not post the Ten Commandments in his classroom. He'll go to jail in lieu of posting the Ten Commandments. Dane Sherman, will the Ten Commandments be behind you at the...
Absolutely. Anybody wants to... Look, if I walk in a classroom and the law says the Ten Commandments are supposed to be in those classrooms, if anybody thinks I'm either going to pull them down, or I'm going to say a mumbling word against them, they are wrong. So, I like Dr. Samuels is one of my favorite people in the world, but we definitely have different approaches to that particular topic.
Well, there are bigger issues to fight, and I would prefer to have Dr. Samuels on the outside fighting those issues rather than being in a jail cell for the Ten Commandments. And, of course, Scott has a point. Now, I don't think he intended it to be made quite this way, but... conservatives love it when Democrats get lathered up about this because it makes it look like they're against the Ten Commandments, and we know that's not necessarily the case. I think Republicans violate the Ten Commandments. Last time I checked, Bob Livingston committed adultery, Newt Gingrich committed adultery, Rush Limbaugh committed adultery, David Vitter committed adultery. All of them would be put to death based on the Ten Commandments. But when you say, I don't want them in the classroom, it makes you sound like you're against the Ten Commandments, Dane.
Yeah, I'm not against the Ten Commandments, and I'm definitely not going to be taking any down anywhere. I just don't think it's the way I think the most effective places to teach religion are in homes and in churches, synagogues, mosques, I don't necessarily think that teaching religion is the most effective thing to do, say, in a library science class.
Well,
and I just don't think it's the right way to go about it. I don't think it's going to be effective. And also, I'll go this far to say, if Scott really wanted a religious revival to break out in this country, he needs to be the one fighting putting religion in the classroom, and people will rebel, particularly young people, and you might have a complete religious takeover of all the schools in a generation. But that's being strategic and not being political.
Well, one of the things that Democrats conveniently forget to mention is that the founding fathers clearly thought that biblical wisdom was important, because one of the first acts of the Congress was to order Bibles and to hire a chaplain and use public money to do that. If you don't believe me, you can get on the World Wide Web and look that up.
Right. And the same founding fathers were in favor of slavery, and I don't think that's a biblical purpose. But we'll talk more with Scott and Dane after this time out. We'll go to the phones in short order on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Right now we're talking about state politics. We'll segue to the national scene with Scott Wilfong on the right, Dane Sherman on the left. One item that is front and center on the Metro section of The Advocate today is that Lane Grigsby, the guy who says, I'm the kingmaker, he's still pushing for that state constitutional convention. Is he going to get it, Scott Wilfong?
I feel like at some point they will get it, as long as they don't give up. But it will likely come next year. There's too much worry about what could happen if they go in there. I know the district attorneys, the sheriffs, that was a lot of the thing that led to the demise of the effort this year was either trying to restrict them. There was those that thought we shouldn't touch those areas, and then there's others that think, no, that's how can we fix things if we don't touch those areas. So if they keep at it though, I think you'll see one.
Dane, do we need a constitutional convention in Louisiana?
No, we don't need a constitutional convention in Louisiana. This is absurdity. And I agree with what Scott's saying, is the strategy was real bad. I don't know if they really want these things. Just do just amend the Constitution. The people voted up or down. They said they didn't have a draft. And then we read in The Advocate today that, darn it, they've got a draft. And Lane Grigsby sent the draft out, though I have not read the draft because it wasn't linked to the articles, either in The Illuminator or The Advocate, that basically it looks like Stephen Procopio of the PAR wrote the draft. And now we have a draft. So to me, it's disgraceful. It needs to be up front. It needs to be out front. And I think people will respond to that, and that is not what we've seen so far.
877-217-5757 is your number, and talk@talklouisiana.org. If you'd like to join the conversation with Dane Sherman and Scott Wilfong. James in Metairie. James, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Jim. Good morning, everybody. Scott just lied this morning, bearing false witness, when he made this outrageous claim that Democrats want more crime. Ten Commandments, by the way, this is a sanitized version. It's a censored version. They don't include the problematic parts of it, like Jesus, who is God, by the way, says that Jesus or God is a jealous God, and passing on the sins of the father down to the children. And the last one about, you know, coveting
okay,
the
neighbor's
ass.
Okay, well, what's the question here? What's your question, James?
Well, it's just they need to put a stop to this. This is a fraud.
All right. I think there's a question in there somewhere. But this has gotten people lathered up. Both sides. Scott's lathered up too.
I think he makes a great point, although unwittingly. You know, if we'd like to make the Bible required reading for all high school freshmen, I think that wouldn't be a terrible thing. You know, we could make a law for that. Let them understand the entire context of the Bible, which is what I think James was going at. Mm-hmm. All those statements, you know, those are biblical verses, but you know, let's require a class on Bible for every high school freshman in Louisiana.
Well, we know that Donald Trump reads the Bible regularly.
2 Corinthians.
That's right.
Two Corinthians walk into the bar.
Jim, let me make this comment. I have read the Bible through one end to the other completely 5 or 6 times. Okay, so I'm probably part of the 1/10 of 1% of Americans that even read it through one time. So, you know what? I never had to have a high school, junior high, college class on the Bible to have read it through five or six times. Right. So I don't know why we necessarily have to have the state mandating people to read the Bible. I don't think it's an effective way to do it. And I mean, it's just, I don't see it as an effective way. I'm not lathered up on it like Scott is.
Well, but, it is amazing that that we are of a mind that the Ten Commandments will actually change behavior, because last time I checked, Bibles are in almost every hotel room in America. And last time I checked, there's lots of fornication and adultery going on in those hotel rooms, which is specifically prohibited by the Bible to the point of death. Jeff in Hammond. Good morning, Jeff. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to call in and just say that I think we're having a real misunderstanding of the Bible here. It's like, because the Ten Commandments, they're not trying to put you to death. And nowhere in the Ten Commandments or the story of getting the Ten Commandments does it say you will be put to death for committing
sin. But the Bible says you will be put to death, and it is a biblical document. Go ahead.
It is only a sin. It's moving away from the way of God. If you commit those sins, you're never smited down. You're never killed for it by God. You're killed by people.
All right. Okay. Rebel in Sherwood. Let's go to the next one. Rebel, you're on Talk Louisiana with Scott and
thank
Dane.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you. Thank you to your guests there. I'd like both of your guests to respond to me here. I'm a little concerned about Scott's comments regarding Democrats and criminals. I do know that statistically speaking, crime is down across the board, across the country. But the last time I checked, it was actually the Republican Party who wanted to put a convicted criminal, a fraudster, a rapist, and traitor back in the White House, and it was that conservative Supreme Court who wants to make that criminal a king.
we could also talk about the criminal district attorney that falsified the charges and the. Yeah,
he's
the,
never
all
been
that,
convicted of any crime. Now Donald Trump has. Trump's been convicted of 34 felony counts.
Mm-hmm.
He is a convicted felon, and you're all in, aren't you?
Yeah, because I can. I think conservatives can smell a rat when they see one, and just like Fannie Willis sleeping with her little assistant prosecutor there, and the judge in New York that was in the bag.
That's not a
we
crime.
We know what Trump conservatives know what trumped up charges
right.
are,
I got you. Are they trumped up charges, Dane Sherman?
No,
this was
Rebel
a state court, by the way.
Go
ahead.
In his question, we know the answer. It's because the Republican Party under Trump has become a lawless party. And Scott will not admit to the hypocrisy of it, that the Supreme Court case that came out to give him immunity is a horrific case. Mm-hmm. And if it would have been pre-Trump, it would be the Republicans jumping up and down about how horrific this law was. And so America does not need a king, and America does not need a felon in the White House.
All right. Well, when I asked Mike Johnson a few weeks ago if he thought that Donald Trump had relations with Stormy Daniels, he said, absolutely not. Dane Sherman, does it pass the smell test?
Yeah, well, look, sometimes, Jim, you've been in this business a long time, and it has to tickle you when you ask the obvious question that you know the right answer to, yet somebody is erudite and educated as our speaker, Mike Johnson, will give you such foolishness.
You know,
and we know what happened.
Do you think, Scott, that Donald Trump had relations with Stormy Daniels?
You know, what profit is the answer to that question? Well, I have no idea.
Well, he paid $130,000 for it to be quiet. Why would he do that if he did not have relations?
I think America has a history of people seeking out money.
Here's
and
a guy who wrote Art
people.
Of the Deal. Sure sounds like Art of the Steal to me.
Look, Joseph Stalin's number
right.
one guy said, show me the man and I'll show you the crime.
All right. Well, he was convicted on 34 counts by a jury of his peers in his hometown, Christian Grand Coteau. Grand Coteau. Chris, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi. If I may, I'd like to go back to the Ten Commandments.
All right. Quickly.
If y'all think the kids are going to read an 11x14 poster hung up in a classroom, y'all are wasting your time. Kids are not going to read that.
All right. But then again, Dane, let's start with you on this. What harm is it going to do? Is it really going to be a world changer to have the Ten Commandments in a classroom?
Well, what you're saying, I think it's harmful that it's on its face unconstitutional. It'll go through the courts. We'll see how it works out.
at the end of the day, I think what happens is it backfires. And it ends up doing the very opposite of what people want, and it ends up being a mockery because the state is not good at promoting religion. It isn't now. It never has been good. And I think it's going to backfire, and I think that the Republicans, they want it as a wedge issue and a political ploy, but if their real goal is the moral strength of our country, it's not necessary to stick the Ten Commandments on every wall.
Look, I think you're missing the whole point of this bill, which was the Ten Commandments are at the root of America's legal system. The obligation to tell the truth and provide correct testimony and the penalty for not doing it, comes directly from the Bible.
I'm with you. Robin Dow has something she says when we talk about the truth, and both of the presidential aspirants a few weeks ago, 13 nights ago in the great city of Atlanta, did not tell the truth, and one perhaps told untruths more than the other. Here is the fact checker. This guy did this on the fly, by the way. This was right after the debate. Daniel Dale of CNN, he's on what he found immediately without even going through a whole lot of, as Scott would say, data. Here's what he found about Biden and Trump 2 weeks ago.
What stood out was the staggering number of false claims from former President Trump. On first count, Aaron, I counted at least 30 false claims. Now, President Biden also made false claims, at least 9 false or misleading statements on first count. I'll give you some of them. He said he's the only president in a while who didn't have any troops dying anywhere in the world. Troops have, of course, died on his watch. He said he's put in a $15 per shot cap on insulin and Medicare. It's a $35 a month cap. He said it's a $200 cap on overall drug spending in Medicare. It's $2,000 a year. He said the border now has fewer crossings than when Trump was in office. That's generally not true. He said, or at least strongly suggested, unemployment was at 15% when he took office. It was actually 6.4. He said Trump wants to get rid of Social Security. Trump doesn't. He said billionaires pay 8.2% in taxes. It's much higher. He said Trump told Americans to inject bleach amid COVID. We know Trump made foolish comments about scientists studying disinfectant injection, but didn't frame it as advice to people. And Biden said the Border Patrol endorsed him. No, its union supported the border bill he supported, never endorsed him himself. In fairness, the president did appear to clarify that one. Now, the Trump list, it is way, way longer. So, deep breath. He said some Democratic states allow people to execute babies after birth, an egregious lie that is illegal in every state. He said everybody, even Democrats, wanted Roe v. Wade overturned. Roe was supported by 2/3 of Americans, even more Democrats. He said every legal scholar wanted Roe overturned, abortion returned to the states. Legal scholars have told me directly this is not true. He said the U.S. currently has the biggest budget deficit ever. No, that happened under Trump in 2020. He said the U.S. currently has a record trade deficit with China. That also happened under Trump in 2018. He said Biden personally gets a lot of money from China. Zero evidence of this. He said there were no terror attacks during his presidency.
All right, we're going to take a short break and return for a few more minutes with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. We're wrapping it up with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman, and on deck are Gary Robertson, Executive Director of the Adult Literacy Advocates, along with Ronna Gray. But we're going to try to take a few of you. We've been waiting for a while. Please keep your remarks to, if you can, please, 15 to 20 seconds for Dane and Scott. Patrick in Innisfail States. Patrick, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Hey, so the immunity or the vaccine for COVID was under Trump, but it came, like, when they found that vaccine, it came out right after the election. Do you think somebody held off on?
No, I don't. But Trump has not taken credit for his greatest accomplishment, which was Operation Warp Speed. Scott, he doesn't want to say I did it. Actually, that was a good thing he did.
It was. And I mean, you know, that's the one area I will criticize Trump on is everybody asks, how did he lose? He lost because he couldn't get a straight line on how to handle the pandemic. Shut down, don't shut down, mandates, no mandates. It was, you know, putting Anthony Fauci on TV. I mean, I'm 100% Trump guy, but that he made a mistake. He mishandled it.
All right, so. Dane?
Yeah, it was a blunder, and there's no giant conspiracy to hold the vaccine. One thing Patrick needs to understand, Democrats cannot hold on to a conspiracy. They can't plan that far ahead. Well, that's impossible.
Mike in Villa Del Rey, quickly, Mike, you're on with Scott and Dane. Mike?
Hello?
Yes, Mike.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes, quickly, Mike.
Okay, quickly, I got a comment on the Ten Commandments that just in case They would have had them on the wall or the Stuma High when I went. I would have still been under the bleachers smoking weed with a cheerleader.
All right. Thank you. Dale on Scenic Highway. Dale, thank you, Mike. Dale, you're on.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to know, how do you think making it more difficult for people to get information on the Louisiana government is any good? And where did Landry get the money to give his cabinet raise?
All right. Well, governors make choices on how they spend money, and let's save that one for another day. But what about the governor's penchant for saying that a lot of government information is private that really is not in the public domain? Scott, is that a good idea?
You know, it's like a lot of ideas that get traction in the legislature. There were some bills by Republicans. They were friends of mine, but they went too far. I don't want to see our public records be off limits. But I also know how the liberal left can bog down staff and you know, and hamper the work of government by continually sending in freedom of information requests.
Dane is... freedom of expression, open records.
I partly agree with Scott. It's bad. It's bad to do that. We need to have the documents available to everybody.
Everybody. Yep. Okay. Final caller, David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Scott and Dane.
Good morning. Mr. Wolfall, the father of the Constitution, James Madison, would disagree with everything you said earlier about the Congress and the founding fathers supporting the Christian Bible and a chaplain. Furthermore, Donald Trump at a campaign rally smirked, smiled, and gloated and ask the crowd the question, anybody here knows how Paul Pelosi is? And Trump ridiculed a New York Times reporter for having a disability. Trump ridiculed the president for having a stutter.
All right. And his running mate possibilities, all of them at times have said that Donald Trump is unfit to serve. That includes J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Doug Burgum. Scott, who gets call as his running mate as the Republican convention is next week?
I mean, I'm heading to Milwaukee on Saturday. I'm hoping we'll see Doug Burgum as the nominee.
North Dakota.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Dane, who would be the best choice for Donald Trump?
Yeah, Rubio. Rubio because of the Hispanic vote. And the thing about the running mate, if Trump doesn't knock the running mate off, they can always be cellmates in the near
but
future.
There is a constitutional question because, according to the Constitution, if Rubio remains a Floridian, and he could move to another state, but that would
That's
mean
right.
giving up his gig as senator, I would think. They have to give up the 30 electoral votes in Florida, which would mean...
No, they just can't. The electors cannot vote for both. So it would be a problem on the... They could vote for Trump, but they couldn't vote for Rubio for vice president.
It would be a constitutional question.
It would be.
But I think it would mean that they would have to forego those 30 electoral votes, which
it won't.
May.
I don't think it'll be Rubio. I don't.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Dane. And good luck,
Scott,
in Milwaukee, a town that's known for beer. Maybe you'll see Brett Kavanaugh there. And coming in studio now are two people who are familiar to most people in our listening audience. One in particular, Rana Gray, has been with us many times, the author of Familiar Evil. And Gary Robertson, Executive Director of the Adult Literacy Advocates. And they are here to talk about being a Capital Area United Way partner and providing education services for our community. And Baton Rouge, as we know, has a community with a per capita rate of extreme participation for library cards. And Rana was recently there at the library talking about her best-selling book of a few years ago. But literacy remains a major issue. And good morning to you, Gary and Rana. But Rana, let's start with you as far as what's going on in your partnership with the Adult Literacy Advocates.
Jim, thank you for having us on. It's such an honor to be invited to be their speaker for their fundraiser this year. And so I'm really trying to update people on what's happened with the Familiar Evil story, which you know very well and have been nice enough to have me on before to talk about. But I'm so impressed with the work they do and the courage of the people who present themselves there and ask for help, adults who need help reading. And so I'm just doing everything I can to ask people to come out. I'm going to do my best to make it interesting and support this great cause.
Well, when is the event?
This Sunday, July 14th, Bastille Day. 3 o'clock at the main library on Goodwood.
I see the billboards that say exactly that.
I'm so appreciative that they put me on a billboard and I'm not missing or wanted for something. So,
July 14th, 3 p.m., the main library at Goodwood. And it is Ronna Gray, and it involves adult literacy advocates, and Gary Robertson is the executive director. And this is a group that certainly is involved in making our community better. What do you do on a daily basis?
Well, thank you for having us, Jim. And we work with adults who need help with their reading skills, from basic literacy all the way up to preparing to take their high school equivalency test. And we also have a program for ESL students who are working to improve their English.
I recall Patty Romer, when she was First Lady, made literacy her big issue. She was doing commercials touting literacy and saying we had an issue in Louisiana. I think we still have one, but are we doing better?
I'd like to think we are, yes. The statistics are still not great. We have been in operation since 1966. This is our 57th year as an agency, and the fact that we continue to have clients who need to come to us, I think, says a lot about where we are as a state.
Well, this Sunday, July 14th, 3 p.m., Main Library at Goodwood, Ronna Gray will speak, and this involves not only her story and the story that she's unearthed about the nefarious Scott Rogers, familiar evil, but also 100% of the proceeds will go to adult literacy programs, and it's much harder for an adult to learn to read than a child. We get it set in our ways, don't we?
Definitely. I was a volunteer in public schools, and I thought at the time, every child needs to start off with a basic understanding of reading, and then they can go from there. And when I hear of the adult literacy advocates helping people who are already in their 30s, 40s, and on up, it is amazing. So one thing I'm excited about, as you know, I've been working with Unconventional Entertainment, and which is backed by Sony Pictures Television, and we have a video put together in trying to sell this documentary series on Familiar Evil, and I've gotten permission to show that five-minute video at the talk. So for people who have heard me speak before, there's a lot of new things going on, and I think they'd love seeing it. We have two of the people who are survivors of abuse of Scott Rogers, the principal in this story, who are on camera talking about this. And it's be the first time ever any of them you've heard from any of them. So that's pretty exciting. The other thing is the tickets are so affordable. It's only $30, as I tell people, less than that if you're young or old, students are over 65, or just go on adultliteracyadvocates.org and make a donation.
Well, it's at the Main Library where Ron has been before, and it's a captivating story. And 10 years next month, right? Scott Rogers.
Yes.
He hosted Around Town. That was his show. And his co-host was now in the state legislature and was, I think, one of the Ten Commandments leaders, right?
Kelly Hennessey.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she was.
Now Kelly Dickerson.
Dickerson, right.
Yeah. But yeah, she was for the – I don't think Scott was a real adherent to the Ten Commandments, but he was a TV star.
No, right.
and to show you how sometimes people who have the gift of gab, which Scott certainly did, can defy people. I remember reading about the guy, John Peters, the hairstylist who became head of a studio.
Yes.
And he was Barbara Streisand's boyfriend. And he was the motivation for Warren Beatty's movie Shampoo. He could not read.
And you know
what finished him? Email. People were emailing him and wondering why he wasn't responding.
Oh my God.
That's what got him. Until then, he was able to fake it. But it is really hard, Gary, to fake it if you can't read, isn't it?
It is. But you would be surprised at how many ways these people have learned to accommodate and to find a way to cover it up, which proves how smart they really are.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a measurement of a person being smart. It's just something they didn't get around to doing. But if you don't get around to reading, you're at a disadvantage in our world.
And we have our youngest student is 18. Our oldest student is in his 80s.
Well, you can go to adultliteracyadvocates.org to find out more information about this fine organization. And Sunday, 3 o'clock, Main Library, Goodwood, you'll hear from the remarkable Ronna Gray.
In the air conditioning.
In the air conditioning. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay safe and stay tuned.